Welcome to Trax Cultures, the podcast dedicated to unraveling the intricacies of transitions across cultures. Whether you're a globetrotter embracing new cultures, an expat transitioning to life in a foreign land, or a supportive friend or family member, this podcast is your companion on the expedition through the exciting and sometimes challenging realms of culture shock and transition. I'm your host, Mike Piccinato, and I've been on my own cross-cultural journey, navigating the intricacies of culture shock, language barriers, and the joys and frustrations that come with embracing a new way of life. Much of what we do in this series will be framed by the book Transitions Across Cultures by Dr. Stephen W. Jones. Stephen and his wife, Jenny Jones, will be frequent guests on the show as we accompany them on their own cross-cultural journey as they leave their home and life in Minnesota to join me at Envision Berlin in Berlin, Germany. This is episode 7 of Trax Cultures. This is a legacy episode of Unterwegs, the En Route podcast, moved here to have all our episodes about transitioning across cultures in one spot. The original episode was recorded on July 22nd, 2021. Stephen and Jenny, it's exciting to have you guys back for our third three-part series talking about transitioning cultures. So far, we've talked about beginning with the endings and the neutral zone. And this week, we're going to go back to where your book actually starts, Stephen. We're talking about what is culture. And culture can be tricky to define. Can you give us a short definition?
I think one of the ones that I really like is, and I think a friend of mine came up with it, but basically just how people do their stuff together. So, I think back in the 60s or something, somebody did a study of definitions of culture, and there were already like 600 back then, and there are more now. So it really is one of these things that's just very difficult to define. But yeah, that simple idea of how people do their stuff together kind of catches a lot of it. It's culture is something that is held in common with other people. That it's not, it doesn't really make sense to say my own culture as though you as an individual have one. There's another definition I like from Bennett that talks about other aspects of culture, that it's learned and shared, that it contains values and beliefs and behaviors, that it's of a group of interacting people. So it's not just a group of people that you kind of randomly pull from the world, but like it's people interacting with each other. And in that process, they develop those attitudes, those values, beliefs, behaviors.
I really like the definition of people doing stuff together, because it broadens it from maybe one of our most common misunderstandings of cultures, and that is that cultures are very country-based or land-based. Right. And culture is deeper than that.
Yeah. Actually, cultures, it does not map well onto our, political geography. There are certainly overlaps. It was one of the problems that I had in my dissertation, was trying to figure out, you know, how do we talk about culture at the national level when actually there's so much more variation than that?
So it's absolutely legitimate when a family talks about their family culture, or when an organization talks about trying to develop an organizational culture.
Yeah, the question of levels of analysis of culture is really interesting. Yeah, I think where maybe it would be legitimate to talk about my culture would be to talk about the specific intersection of all the different cultures that I'm part of, right? So my family culture, maybe the town that I live in, the organization that I'm part of, maybe the church denomination that I'm with, like all of those different layers. And of course, you're the only one probably that occupies your exact spot in that, you know, particularly when you include generational culture and gender, you know, there's all of these different layers that stack up.
Wouldn't that be a unique Venn diagram exercise, just to start to map people out from the different cultures that they're in and find that point in the middle?
Yeah. Like to see where people overlap, you're saying?
Yeah. I mean, to see how much overlap does person A have in any culture, and you just think, sorry, this is just a total random brain thing, but you know, you start to map out individuals in a family, and now you guys have another point in common because of the Jones. And when you come to here to Berlin, there'll be a point in common with us. But the more you do, the smaller that individual place that each individual person occupies would become. I mean, really, the only way to have a largely overlapping culture would be in cultures, societies where you do almost everything together, where your family is not very different from your tribe, which is centered right. in the same geographical location over a lifetime.
I mean, I think Jenny's family shares much more in common with each other than they do with anybody else. And we overlap to some degree with them, but we have all of these experiences where we're part of different cultural groups that actually make us quite different from her family.
Yeah, I was thinking about that as you were talking. Like, that's part of the thing about, you know, we're going to go live at my parents' for not quite a month. And we'll be gone for some of that. But even when we go back, you know, or when you visit someone, you're entering into their family culture. And even living in the same country, but we're in a different state, we're in a different town that we have around us. So now we're entering back into their culture. And it's not just their work schedule, but it's all of the little things that we take for granted. Like, oh, what does it mean to be on time? Like, in my family unit, even, like, because I think that's probably different.
Both, like, practically, mm-hmm. what does it mean to be on time? When are you on time and when are you late? But then also, what is the relational meaning of being on time? And those things are different there than they are for us in our normal patterns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's even within the same family, within the same country. But
yeah.
our experiences begin to change our culture, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. What are some good metaphors for culture?
There are a bunch, and they get a little confusing. I think when you try to layer them all together, you can make a really interesting drawing, I guess. Sometimes it's talked about as a web with all these interconnected pieces. There's this idea that it's a semiotic web, so a web of symbols and ways that meaning is communicated through symbols. Sometimes it's talked about as being like an onion, and I think of like in my mind now, you know, it's like, oh, because onions have layers, like ogres have layers. Yeah. So I think of Shrek, you know.
but then also parfaits.
Yeah, parfaits have layers. Yeah, and that may be a better. Yeah. It's certainly tastier.
Well, it depends on what you're eating.
I guess that's true. There's
an onion parfait.
No, not that one.
Oh, that took a turn. there's a. The idea that culture can be like, I think probably one of the most common ones, and it can be very useful, is the idea that culture is like an iceberg. And that emphasizes the idea that culture is like, what you can see at the surface is only about 10% of the mass of an iceberg. And then actually when you think about how buoyancy works, like that 10% is being supported by everything underneath it. But of course that's largely invisible, when you're at the surface. And I think that metaphor may be one of the more useful ones. Although one of my profs, Milton Bennett, wrote an article a few years ago, entitled "Culture is Not an Iceberg." And he was, you know, kind of pushing back against the overuse of that metaphor. So here's where it gets problematic. When you think about an iceberg, it's a relatively static thing. It changes very slowly. And when we think about culture as an iceberg, we're like, okay, I need to find out what's on top and what's on the bottom, and then I've got it. But of course, cultures are changing constantly. So another metaphor would be a river, where although it is always there, it's always changing. And it runs through this course. And so,
even how much can change the river, so to speak, of like flooding, right, what other environmental things are changing that river in that way.
So what if we were to take the iceberg metaphor and kind of dig into it a little bit? And if people are more visual learners, you have some videos on your I Am Intercultural website.
Yeah, actually on the Trax Cultures, it's traxcultures.com. We put together a video trying to visually show the iceberg idea.
And we can put those in the show notes if people are more visual learners and would like to take a look at those. But let's take maybe a specific part of culture that might be easier to dig into with that metaphor in mind. So one of the things that we see on the surface is maybe how people greet each other. So that's a surface level thing that's super visible. But what could be some of the things below the waterline that are supporting that?
So at the waterline would be language, because language is visible, but there's a ton going on with language that is not visible. Who do you use which forms of words with? What are the grammatical rules and how do those change based on the situation that you find yourself in? So there's a whole bunch of stuff where language is kind of that it is visible, we see it, but there's also stuff going on that's actually quite complex. But yeah, then you get into these less visible questions that have to do with, for example, gender. You know, how is gender understood in the culture that you're in? So do men and women greet each other equally, or do they greet each other differently, or do they not greet each other at all? And that's the kind of thing, you can observe that behavior, but in terms of understanding why it's happening, there are beliefs that are underneath the surface. And when you violate those, it's often clear something has gone wrong, but it's not clear why. Another would be related to power or authority. And every culture has power differences, has authority differences, status differences, but both how those are established and maintained, as well as how people feel about them, varies quite a bit by culture. So there's this idea of power distance that in some cultures, there's this fairly large power distance and people acknowledge and appreciate those power differences or those status differences and really view those differences as being important. And then in kind of flatter, more egalitarian societies, there's this idea that we see those power differences, but we don't like them and we want to minimize them. So, you know, do you emphasize, you know, if you have a title, do you emphasize your title when you're introducing yourself? Or do you introduce yourself by your first name and you know, immediately skip all of that? But that is an observable behavior. But what's happening underneath the surface involves this really complex calculation of how do I understand my status and the role of status in society and how we navigate status and how we negotiate it.
Yeah. So I thought of a couple of things while you were talking about that. One would be what we see on the surface in a greeting, for example, when we meet somebody out of an Arabic culture is the handshake. And all of a sudden you have the male-female part that works its way into that. And sometimes females from an Arabic background will refuse to shake my hand. It has nothing to do with them not being friendly. But if I only see it from my cultural background, then I miss some of those things that are happening in the background.
And I think there's also this risk that maybe somebody could explain it to you, maybe like, oh, well, you know, there's the issue is that you're a guy. And if you don't understand what that means down in the, you know, the supporting part of the iceberg of that culture, then it just seems absurd to you. Like, well, yeah, okay, obviously. You know, like, I know that I'm a guy. I know that she's a woman. What's the problem? You know, because you don't have that same information set. What that means under the surface for you is not the same as what it means under the surface for her.
In German culture, titles can be really important. So when we were working in our gallery, it was always really, really important when someone was getting ready to give a formal speech that we introduced them with all of their titles. So it could be a Herr Doctor Professor, and you would just stack those titles up. And it's also super helpful when we're searching for an apartment. So when we were looking for your apartment, it was always Herr Dr. Jones and his wife are looking for an apartment because those titles carry weight. Mm-hmm. But once you get into a relationship, the titles fall away. You don't ever introduce yourself, a lot like in the US, you don't introduce yourself as Dr. Jones to your friends or ask your friends to address you by the title doctor.
Yeah, it's
Steven, except for Steven's sister, who now has him as Dr. Steven?
Dr. Steven, yeah.
In her phone. So, you know, she's...
Nice.
Yeah.
I mean, and actually, it'd be a good way to kind of annoy people here, right? Would be to insist on the introduction. Yeah, in that way, because that.
Maybe your wife. Maybe annoy your wife.
What's that?
If you constantly.
If I told you to call me doctor.
No. If you constantly introduced yourself.
Oh yeah, that's true.
As
Dr. Jones.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's funny.
Yeah. Only if you wore a hat.
You just have to know how to leverage it. But that's also cultural, isn't it?
It is. Well, and even there was a difference. The college that I taught at in Nebraska was more egalitarian than the college that I've taught at in Minnesota. And so it was very common for students to call profs by their first name in the college in Nebraska, or to call us, you know, Mr. or Ms. But here in Minnesota, it's always Professor so-and-so or Dr. so-and-so. And I noticed that difference right away because it was just striking to me. It's like, oh, I hadn't even realized that I was in a particular cultural way of doing things until I went to a place where it was different from that.
There have been a lot of studies that have been done on how our brain works. And it seems that our brains, as amazing as they are, often look for the easiest possible way to get things done. And that's where so often these habits that we have end up developing from. It really frees our brain up to focus on more complex things. But it means that a lot of things, like those day-to-day greetings or etiquette or how do we apologize when we step on someone's toes in the bond, are way more culturally shaped than we often give credit for. And when these little things differ from culture to culture, it can be really disorienting and sometimes maybe even dangerous if we ignore those differences. What are some ways you've seen that happen?
Yeah, I mean, there's just so much there. And in some ways, it's not a thing to be discouraged about with the brain, because it's like, actually, this is part of what helps us, like how we can function so well in the world, is that our brain creates all these shortcuts, you know, and it's, you know, fantastic. But yeah, then it can definitely get us into trouble.
Yeah, I think when we went to Mali a few years ago, just Stephen and I felt super frustrated because I felt like they taught me how to say hello in Bambara, and I could never get it right, ever, because it was very gender-based who you were saying hi to. And then it felt like you kept saying, I think how it went, you know, in English translation, my version is like you said hello to like everyone in the family, like, or like how is your grandmother, how is your father, how is your, and I could never get the order right. I could never get the right words. I think they were poking fun of me a little bit. Like, I think they were teasing me every time. Like, even if they were strangers, I think they're like, okay, let's see how we can make this person uncomfortable, because they would always laugh. But like, I never got it right. So I like literally didn't ever want to do it again. Like, I'm like, I'm done.
So like, the fact that shortcut of hi, hello, how are you, whatever, didn't work, created this barrier for social interaction. So maybe a way to illustrate the point would be, So if you drive in a place that doesn't have roundabouts, and then you go to a place that does, when you come up to an intersection, none of your shortcuts are right. Right. So if you want to make a right turn and you're in a country where you drive on the right-hand side of the road, so I'm thinking of, like, again, where Jenny's family is, there's hardly any roundabouts. And then you come up to where we live in Minnesota, or have been living, and there's roundabouts everywhere. Right. Every time you approach that intersection, you don't have the shortcuts yet for what do I do? Because it's different than what you do at a four-way stop. And so if you try to behave in the same way at that intersection, you will get into an accident because you're looking the wrong direction. But it plays out. I don't know. It's one of those things that it plays out at such basic levels that sometimes it's even hard to see it. Things like when you're walking down the street, do you make eye contact with strangers? And in some places, the answer is yes. In some places, the answer is no. Do you smile at people when you see them? Some places, the answer is yes. Some places, the answer is no, that's weird. And some places, it means that you are actually trying to get them to engage you in a way that you may have no intention to, right? You're actually following somebody else's shortcut for something.
Or even, again, in Mali, I had my arm on the window of the car, and that wasn't something I was told I shouldn't do because it communicated a certain thing to the people around me. Like, the window was down and I had my arm on the thing. They're like, don't do that. I was like, okay. Because it was, yeah, definitely something I didn't want to communicate.
And it's amazing how much curiosity can play a role in learning those new cultural values. If you come in just curious to find out what are they, instead of assuming they're the same, it can save you a lot of heartache or headaches, even if it's not heartache level. And some things are just, but man, other things are so ingrained. And one example is just our American greeting of so easily saying, how are you? Which just doesn't work the same here in Berlin. The words are there, and language classes will still teach you how to say that. But what that actually means when you're talking with somebody is that you really are interested in how things are going for them. So it's inappropriate to ask the question when you meet somebody on the street and you know you're going to be going the other direction. And it's just hard to learn and unlearn those things.
And I think one of the big difficulties is it's maybe easier to identify things that we don't know in the new culture. It's harder to realize that we have patterns that we're bringing that are cultural. And so we don't often know what we need to be curious about. I mean, even things like, how do you walk down the sidewalk, you know, are different. And I don't think about the fact that that's cultural, right? When I walk down the sidewalk, I'm like, this is a sidewalk anywhere in the world that has sidewalks. I should be able to walk down the sidewalk. But I almost got hit by a bike in Berlin and it was my fault, you know, like, because I was doing it wrong. And I didn't even know to think about the possibility that I was doing it wrong.
Right. And so even after living here for 9 years, we have to consciously think to remind people, oh, you can't walk on that part of the sidewalk. Because if we don't, they end up almost getting hit by bikes.
Yeah.
I think of other things. And my frame of reference is, of course, that we've lived in Berlin for 9 years. And we've had the opportunity to go back to the U.S., spend a year in the middle, because that's what our organization asks us to do. And you get that reverse culture shock when you go back, because all of a sudden you realize again, oh, wow, there's something that I've learned that's now become a part of my culture, and now it's absent here. One of those for me was how you say goodbye, especially when you're at a setting like a church meeting or together with friends. And in German culture, you would go around the room and you would say goodbye to people and make sure that you were, especially to the people you knew or that you had come with, that you were officially saying farewell to them and that they knew you were going. And there were several times in the U.S. where I was at an event and all of a sudden it turned around and people were gone, but I didn't know they had gone. And I found myself having to deal with disappointment that they had not said goodbye to me, which may not have bothered me at all 5 years before that. But all of a sudden, this was an issue because I had adjusted to a new normal. And so sometimes those differences communicate intentionally or unintentionally, usually unintentionally, but it communicates levels of respect or lack of respect that if we don't learn that new culture or adjust to it, either we're the ones feeling the hurt or other people are.
Mm-hmm. I feel like that's part of, I mean, even that's what you teach your kids. Like, as they get older, you're like, okay, what you're doing right now is showing disrespect to me. And they don't even know that. But then, you know, translating that to, like, reminding ourselves that we're babies in the culture and we'll probably do stuff that is communicating disrespect as an adult. When you're like, no, I've learned how to be respectful. And now I have to learn that all over again.
We're going to leave the conversation there for this week. Please join us again next week as we go to part two of this three-part conversation. In the meantime, if you would like to have contact with us, you can email us at podcast@envisionberlin.com, or you can join our Discord server where there are many different channels that you can converse with us on, including one that especially is focused on this podcast. You'll find the link to that in the show notes below.
This podcast was produced by Envision Berlin in our studios located in Berlin, Germany. If you'd like to send us a note, feel free to send your email to podcast@envisionberlin.com. Thanks for listening.